I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. It's another week, it's another episode. I hope you're all doing well. I'm Stu Iffin, I'm your host, and today I'm joined by two guests. Normally it's just the one, but I was blessed and lucky to have both Frank Carter and Dean Richardson from the Rattlesnakes, and what a absolute joy it was. Both complete gents. We had a lot of fun, and after hearing Frank on Scroob's podcast and being a fan of Frank's music over the last, I guess, 10 years now, certainly didn't disappoint in any way, shape or form. Fascinating conversation. I hope you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we get on with the podcast, big thanks to Scroob and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to 76 for producing this. Thanks to My Name Is Ad for doing the artwork. If you like this and you want to hear other episodes, please have a look in the back catalogue, because there's episodes from people that we mention in this podcast, such as Mr. Eddie Temple Morris, Daniel P. Carter. They all feature on previous episodes. And if you like music and musicians and producers and artists and actors, then just go and have a look in the back catalogue, because there's a stack of it to get stuck into. Also, we have a Patreon account where we put an extra episode out each week as well, and there's merch and stuff like that. So the place to go and find out about all of it is www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'll keep this intro brief. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track with Frank and Dean from the Rattlesnakes. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing, www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15. BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Right, we are recording. We are at the Queen of Hoxton in the basement. Thank you to those guys for letting us use this little bit of space today. And sitting opposite is Dean and Frank Carr.
Hello.
Hello.
You all right?
Very well.
So you've been here before and it was a bit messy, right?
Yeah. We've had some nights in the Queen of Hoxton, yeah. Yeah. Last time we were here, though, it was a birthday party and it was just, the last kind of solid thing I remember is just smashing a bunch of tequila shots like, on stage as you guys started playing. I was like, I'm not ready. Yeah. I'm not ready.
I mean, I forgot we played. That was the least eventful part of the... I'm just remembering everything else that happened.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, normally when I do this podcast, it's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky that both of you are here today.
Yeah, so thanks for having us both. Yeah.
We're mate. Oh, thank you. It's a grim day out there today, isn't it?
Mm. It's pretty bleak, yeah. The summer's vanished already.
We had a weekend.
We had a weekend and yeah. That's it. All right, well... So track one, I asked you to pick the song with the greatest intro.
Yeah.
And do you want me to prompt you for the songs that you've chosen?
Well, I picked probably one of the greatest, definitely the most memorable intro to a record that I've ever heard, which is Bobby Tarantino, which, you know, Logic. And it was Bobby Tarantino too, like he is Grandma's Spaceship, and it's like... He somehow managed to convince the voice actors from Rick and Morty to come and be Rick and Morty and explain while they're traveling through space what they wanted to listen to in their spaceship. And they picked Bobby Tarantino. They're having a like, proper debate about like which Logic album they should listen to. And it's quite funny to hear these two people that are clearly fans of Logic like discussing like... Would you want to listen to Mixtape Logic or do you want to listen to Bobby Tarantino? And then they finally get down and agree that they both want to listen to some gangster shit. So they jam Bobby Tarantino too on this. And it's fucking
amazing.
And then it drops in and it's like, yeah, it was just memorable, you know? Like I think a lot of people, you can take music quite seriously, you know? And I do a lot of the time. I'm an artist. So, but it was nice to just be reminded that, like, actually sometimes you can have a lot of fun with it too.
Yeah,
like you've got a platform, you've got a responsibility to yourself and your fans, but also to like have fun sometimes.
Yeah. Mm. It's supposed to be escapism, isn't it?
Exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. Mm. And that was, I remember just putting that on the first time and being like, what the fuck? This is extra. Like, it was so extra, but.
Yeah. I listened to it last night for the first time and I was like, what the fuck's this? Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what we do is we also put a Spotify playlist together as well so people can listen to all the songs that you've chosen as
Madness
well.
Madness is going to be the most hectic playlist. Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, can I ask you both, like, in the sort of time that we live in now where music can be quite disposable and instantaneous and stuff like that, with intros, how much pressure from the label is there to hook them straight away? How much pressure do you put on yourselves on an intro? How do you approach writing an intro to your songs?
There's no pressure from our label.
No.
Because the label is us.
Yeah.
So, actually, probably there's loads of pressure from us.
Yeah.
But we think about records in vinyl terms. I think we always have,
yeah.
You know, in the fact that there's two sides. There's a side A and a side B. So our track listing's always been, like, really integral. And I was talking to someone yesterday about our opening track. And I think for me, when we wrote all the songs, we recorded some of them, when we finished Butterfly, just the way it swells in, the first line, like... Everything about it, everyone I spoke to, they just said that once they heard that song, they wanted to hear more.
Mm.
And that was like, where else can it go but at the front of the fucking record, you know? Like, cause it just...
But it's not an immediate track. It's a proper intro to a record. And I think if we had a label, not all of them, but a lot of them would have wanted something that's within 10 seconds there's vocals and things like that. So I think we probably do live slightly outside of the rules in that sense. Like, we, by being our own label, we don't have the same discussions that other artists will have about skip rates and stuff that is a horrible reality of now. But we still treat it as art, whereas I think a lot of artists don't or can't.
Because you mentioned something at the beginning of that answer about sort of side A and side B. Do you still approach putting an album together traditionally, in the sense of like when you would get an album on vinyl and you would know it as a piece of work, rather than in a time where a lot of people just go onto iTunes and cherry pick the tracks? You still put it together as a 100% piece of work.
We were changing it literally to the deadline, like having full listen throughs together. We sit down and have a drink and yeah,
we had six drinks.
We actually
had
delivered
drinks, and then we delivered the fucking track list. We were like, nailed it. It's so sick,
so celebratory.
And then the next day, Matt was like, thank God. Like, our manager was like, thank you so much for sending it over, but why did you put this here? And we were like, hang on, what?
It was missing a whole tune, wasn't
hang
it?
On a second. And he was like, you are absolutely not allowed to drink while you make track lists ever again. I was like, alright,
but cool. No, we really do care about the track listing. and it is like, it's one of, I really enjoy it. Like, it feels just like the hardest puzzle. Like, you've got these songs now and you've got to find the order, and we'll even have the song, like, discussions about whether the song will make it if it can't find its place in the order. Like, the opposite,
it's a proper
of
science to it. Yeah, it's a real art to like getting that bit right, because it stays there forever. Because also you've got to try and think, it's not just about what opens it, but then you've got to think what closes out the first side. Where do you want to leave everybody? And then you need a second opening track, do you know what I mean? But also that needs to be seamless in the record itself, when people are just going to listen to it streaming or on a CD in the car or whatever. So it's fucking, you know, there's a lot goes into it, at least for us anyway.
Oh, it's good to hear that people still approach it in that kind of traditional sense of an album being a body of work, you know.
Yeah.
Track two. The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Fuck, I can't even remember what I said.
You went for Floyd, Shine On Your Crazy Diamond.
Oh, of course I said great. That. Of course I said that. Yeah, I think, I'm sure there are songs earlier on that I listened to, but this one is the first time. When I was listening to this, I had just read quite an in-depth article on Syd Barrett, and I was like absolutely fascinated by him and early Floyd. Like, the Bicycle song is one of my favourite songs of all time. The way they recorded it, the split vocal, it's haunting and terrifying and, like, so pop and, like, so Beatles. And so when I listen to that, like, you can't help but hear, like, the fragility in the music and, like, the absolute love and respect and admiration.
And almost a sort of sense of loss about him as well,
completely,
isn't it?
Completely. That they had for him, you know, like, it's like, you know, you're the great, arguably, you're the greatest fucking rock band in the world, yeah? And you lose touch with, like, this genius, absolute genius, and it falls apart, and what else are you going to do but write, like, the opus of opus to honour him? And what an incredible fucking... What an incredible piece of music. Do you know what I mean?
So I asked you how it affected you emotionally. What was the emotion that you drew from that?
Oh, man. Great fucking sadness. A deep, sorrowful mourning. Because also, like, with any of that stuff, like, I don't know if it's the same for you or you. I don't know. But any time I hear any kind of emotionally affecting piece of music, any little thing that I've got going on in my life is immediately in the forefront of my mind and I'm fucking in tears. Like, same if I watch a film or if I watch a TV show and, like, someone that I'm fucking invested in that show is suddenly hit by a car or shot, or I'm fucking pieces.
Yeah.
Because that is what great cinema, great art, great music does to you. It stops you in your tracks and it makes you think about your own life and, like, what you've got going on. It puts things in perspective. But, yeah, the you know, it wasn't. Then when I listen back to it now, like I listen to that song and I feel everything. There's elation, there's joy, there is sadness, but there's immense happiness and, you know, an excitement. It's inspirational to like go and think like, fuck, this is. That should be the benchmark of like what you do for people, you know, like when you.
Do you like to sort of indulge that sense of emotion when you hear music? Like even if you're not particularly feeling maybe low or a sense of yearning or something, like do you have certain tracks that you just think, I'm going to listen to that and I know where it's going to put me, and just to sort of indulge them emotions that you can draw from music? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. I have... I don't have the same sort of relationship with that. Like, I am like a highly emotional person. So I can listen to a song that I've sung and celebrated. I listen to fucking Sky as a Neighbourhood. I've sung that song at the top of my lungs in, like, absolute, like, fury at gigs and just been like, fucking yes.
What a tune, yeah.
And then one time I put it on in the car, I was driving my daughter and I just burst into tears. I was just like, fucking what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I personally try not to indulge any kind of emotion too much because they're all fucking there every day in my life. Yeah. Anyway,
I've definitely got songs where I'm like, I know exactly how it's going to make me feel and I'll almost use it sometimes, whether it's a good or a bad thing. Like, I know I'm going to put it on really loud and I'm going to feel a certain way, and that's why I've gone for that song. And then it's when you hear them songs when you didn't choose to play it, when you're out and you'll hear it and then you'll suddenly be like, oh my God, I'm not prepared. I didn't create this environment.
How old was you when you heard that, Frank?
I couldn't tell you. Old enough to know better. like I would have been early 20s, probably. Because I remember jamming the Bicycle song like on repeat at the back end of a Gallows tour, like, just in my head, like, this is the greatest 2 minutes of music I've ever heard in my life. And it's nothing. It's just like, I got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got wheels and bells and fuck it. It's so ridiculous, but it's just like, it's pure, you know? It's why I like people like Daniel Johnston. Like, it's pure. It's the purest form of artistry you can get, and it's like a... It's like a Matisse painting, do you know what I mean? It's just like, everything's fucking there. So, yeah.
So, to go back a little bit, so your kind of entry point into music, not as a band, but as people, like, was there music on at home growing up?
Yeah, endlessly for me. My dad's played guitar, and I pretty much listened to Steely Dan and Pink Floyd every day. Like, it was like the annoying thing was my dad could not have music on. That's what our family used to like be annoyed about with him. And then when I get a little bit older, I realise how lucky I am that he was just kind of basically soundtracking our life with good music mostly.
He literally was at the Royal Albert Hall with his dad last night watching Joe Bonamassa. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so this is like,
just when you're young though, you have no idea that that's not how everyone's parents are.
Yeah.
And you seem to either have parents that are immersed in music or not. Like, my mum was one of the youngest members of the Elvis fan club in the UK and ended up like knowing the person that ran it, and she became like my brother and sister's godparents and stuff. And so yeah, I grew up like surrounded by music, almost to the point where I didn't really. It was just, I was quite blasé about it. Like, I played guitar and then put it down and not care about it. It wasn't like a special thing until it kind of hit me that I wanted to make music. But yeah, very lucky with my early kind of offerings from my parents.
And you, Frank?
Yeah, it was very similar. My dad wasn't around a lot. Like, he just worked relentlessly. But what he was, you know, before he had me, sort of tail end of the 70s into the early 80s, he was a DJ, you know, and like CDs has kind of just been born. And so like, yeah, my dad, like, there was an entire wall of our living room was just CDs.
There was furniture made for it, wasn't there?
Like, it was black ash. You know, it was
just with shelves
80s,
just the size of CDs.
Black
and my dad
glass,
loved it.
Fucking, yeah, black, black glass things. Yeah. And then just like the like this immense sound system, which at the time, like, I was completely ignorant to. You know, we had a shit TV, but we had an incredible sound system, which I just never really respected until I got much older. And then I realised, like, the weight of, like, equipment that my dad had in the house. I was like, fucking, you were a bit of a lad, weren't you? Yeah. Like, but, yeah, so we had everything. Everything from the Specials and Madness right through to, you know, fucking Phil Collins and Genesis and Dire Straits. And it was just all there.
Mm. So as musicians, at that point, going back to...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That kind of entry point into listening to music. Was you already sort of deconstructing music and working out how it was put together as, you know, more as a musician and as a creative than maybe just sort of listening to it and enjoying it for...
I think I was always in awe of... like, how do you create that rather than like understanding the layers and stuff. Yeah. And I remember I started writing on a guitar as like a secret in my dad's bedroom with his guitar really early to see what I could do. But it always felt really like an enigma. And I think I've always been drawn. I don't like know music theory, and I don't think I could have learned it by now, but I don't think I want to, because I think for me, it's the magic of like, just instinctively trying to create something and seeing how close I can get to the music that I've always kind of been in love with. So I think, I couldn't listen to a Pink Floyd song now and say, oh, okay, cool, they're playing it in 6/4. Yeah. That's in that key. Oh, he's done that chord change, which is why I feel emotional. Like, I don't want to know that.
Yeah.
I just want to like try and create stuff that makes me feel the same way some of my favorite music does. But I was all very early wanted to make it, but not understand too much about the details of it.
Yeah. Okay, do apologise for some background noise here. The guys are in the venue cleaning it ready for this evening. I'm going to move through the questions a little bit quicker than normal, because I know that you guys have got stacks on today.
No stress.
So for track three, I asked you the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Oh my God.
Slipknot.
Oh my God, of course it is. Wait and Bleed. Yeah, it's Slipknot because, like, we had a prom, you know, everyone has a prom, your age, like 15 or whatever, and the DJ was just like, I'm taking requests, blah, 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 and I was just like, walk up in my leather trench coat with my hair in fucking knots and my acne and my pocket full of vodka, and I was just like, bam, slam this CD on the table, slide it over to him, I'm like, there you go, mate, and it was just, I just recorded Wait and Bleed on that, and just like, that was it. Like,
he played it.
He just played it. Yeah, oh, it was just fucking insane. Like, the whole, like, everyone that was a member of like my little gang just immediately hit the dance floor in, like, there's girls in, like, their prom dresses trying to mosh, and then it, like, lasted about a minute and a half, and then he was like, now for something completely different. But it was good. It was good.
How was school?
School was all right, man. Like, I mean, I was lucky. Like, I went to a good school that was, you know, the teachers were engaged. But, like, I was 4 foot tall with bright ginger hair and big ears. So I just got, like, bullied quite a lot, you know, like. But that shit, like, it makes you who you are. Like, it's character building. I didn't really know what was going on at the time. Like, I now when I look back on it, like, I definitely, you know, there were reasons I didn't want to go to school on a Monday morning, obviously. But also for me, like, it's interesting because I never really applied myself musically, ever. I didn't take music as a GCSE or an A-level. Like, I still can't really play any instruments. Like, I can sing, but, you know, and I sang really well at school until puberty hit, and then it was gone. So, it was, you know, like, it was just... And that was quite devastating for me, because I was quite good. Like, you know, I had a quite good voice when I was younger.
Got quite a good voice now, mate.
Hey, you're all right,
let's
go. Mate?
Let's go.
Can't say that I had a quite good voice.
You should have heard me back then. Yeah. Fucking jeez. But yeah, so it was, you know, school was up and down. Like it is for every young kid.
Yeah.
So what I would say, if you're a young kid listening to this podcast and you're going through some shit at school, go through it. Just fucking keep going. Keep your head up. Fuck them all. Like, it ends. And when it ends, yeah, the intelligent ones are the ones that rise to the top. And trust me, yeah, if you're having a bad time when you're fucking like 15 to that 18, fuck, man, when you hit 25, you're going to be having the best fucking life
ever. It is that, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
The people that were having the best time at school are now the people that you're like, it didn't go quite well for you after school, did it?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
I say it to my daughter every morning. My youngest, he's so riddled with anxiety and hates school and comes home every night and says, I've got no friends, and has a lunch on her own every day. And, like, as a parent, I know you're a parent, Frank. Yeah, I don't know if you...
I'm not, no. Like, but I've been that kid at school.
You can do as much as you can for your kids, but you can't make their friends for them.
No, it's
painful. And I say to her all the time, I said, look, because she's so creative, she's so great with, like, YouTube videos and messing around with, like, songs and stuff. And I'm like, trust me, when you get through this... Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be the one laughing.
Being creative and clever at school is not cool. And it's insane. Because even as soon as you hit A-level even, suddenly all the people that just got by being cool and whatever, like smoking or whatever was cool at the time, then are drawn to you because they're like, oh, so you've got skills that can actually do stuff in this world for the rest of our lives. And then suddenly these people want to be your friend. And it's the weirdest thing. But I think it, like you said, it can definitely help also mould a stronger person that goes out into the real world with far more failures, which then builds them up. So
and more interesting.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just before we move on to the next question, did you kind of feel a connection with your mates at school and stuff like that? Did you feel, and also did you feel like as I know you said you wasn't, you were singing, but was creativity like encouraged at school?
It was by my teachers that were creative, the art teacher, and, like, you know, my art teacher Mr. Smith was epic. He was fucking a living legend. But it was like, it was, I could tell it was hard work for him, you know, the system.
When you get older and you realize this, some of the teachers that were incredible but just fighting against it, like, you realize that in hindsight. But my school didn't really have much positive creativity. I bonded with other people in the same position that didn't like sport, which is all my school seemed to care about. So then we started bands, and there was the odd teacher that would let you use a room to start a punk band on your own, but the school kind of education side didn't enable any of that for us.
I was like the one kid, I was always in bands, but I was always a singer, you know. So going back to, like, you know, like music early in your life and how it, whether you wanted to play or not. I never could play. I was never interested to, but what I cared about was performance. You know, I would watch great performers and just mimic them and just try and, like, do that. And so I was always, like, just extra, you know. Didn't really have the best voice, but, like, I was happy to get on a table at a gig and like fucking sing from there, you know, and like draw all the attention to me, like, so that people at least were like smiling, going, "The fuck is this kid doing?" Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's awful, but he just he's the only person in this room that doesn't know it. Do you know what I mean? And like, if you've got that kind of confidence, which I didn't have as a kid, but I was able to switch it on in my performance, like, that carried me through a lot of life. Like, it really did. So,
do you feel like you're saying the same?
When I started getting a bit older, yeah, definitely. I couldn't find the words a lot of the time. I feel like I've got more to say now than I ever have in my life. Like, genuinely. And I can find a fucking... I know what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah.
Before, I tripped over myself a lot. Quite a lot. But I think a lot of people do.
That's growing up, right?
Certainly is, yeah.
Track 4. The first record that you remember buying.
See, I can't even
remember. You went for Dookie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This, I mean, we used to have a Virgin Megastores in Hemel Hempstead.
Mm.
Was there one in Welland?
Yeah. Turned into MVC.
Yeah.
What happened to that?
Yeah, we had an hour price, actually, before that. Fucking hell. That's going way back, kids.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember walking in there, and they had... I bought, like... Dookie was the first one on my list. And then... A week later, I bought... I'll tell you about Dookie in a minute, but a week later, I went back in and bought, like, something else by Green Day. And the guy, and I bought it from the same guy. And he was this guy that just had, like, jet black hair, like, tons of skull rings. He was like... And it was clear that he wanted to help me, but didn't know how.
Yeah.
Because I was buying punk and he knew metal. Do you know what I mean? And then, so literally, like, I remember going in there, like, the next week, and he was like... Hey, follow me. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. And he takes me over to Green Day and he's like, we got these in for you. And he's like, somehow managed to get like Japanese release editions of everything. Like,
wow.
And I'm like, bro, this whoa, like, this is amazing. And they have like all the bonus stuff on it. And like, so and he was like, you don't have to buy them, but we got them for you. And I was like, I couldn't even afford them, but I like had to buy like at least one or two of them.
How fucking cool is that?
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, he was a fucking cool guy. But then I remember going back in like a few years later, and I by this point, you know, we had a bit of a rapport. I'd been ordering some CDs that were coming out, and I went in. I remember going in there, and him just like, I bought a bunch of records, and he just slid the Lamb of God CD over the counter at me. He's like, "You must listen to this." Yeah,
he was waiting for his time, weren't he? Okay, all those, it's all gonna be all right.
Yeah, and I bought it. And I just remember being like, "Fucking hell, what is this?" But yeah, but Dookie, like, look. Green Day, one of the most important punk bands of all time, I think. Like, they just took everything and they wrapped it up in that skate punk sound that so many bands were trying to find.
And what a sleeve.
What a sleeve. Yeah, I mean, that's probably inspired my drawing along the way as well. But yeah, it's all there, man. It's all there. Nimrod, actually, was the next one that I bought.
Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So, if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off The Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through. And you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. That's so cool when you find someone, like, never having like an older brother or sister myself, like, it was speaking to people in record shops and things like that, and them turning you on to stuff. And it's like... I hope that still exists in some of the indies and stuff like that, because it's a really good rite of passage, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about it a lot because we just did some stuff to support Record Store Day, and we're always trying to support like young independent record stores because of what they did for me, you know? And that was, we're talking about a Virgin Megastores, but back when people really cared about the fact that they could work in music, you know, in retail. Now you've got Banquet.
Yeah, it's happening every day in Banquet. Yeah. It's still got that same culture, for sure.
You've got the LP Cafe in Watford, you've got Empire in St Albans, you've got Resident in Brighton. Like, so many good record stores up and down the country that are now packed with adults like me, that were kids like me, that went into a Virgin Megastores to buy a punk record, and someone said, oh, if you like that, you'll like this.
Yeah.
And you put it on the listening station.
Oh my god, the
next to
the
next to like there's buttons like Cliff Richard, and there's like all the number ones, so that all the biddies are in there.
There's
like,
always one alternative listening CD in there to take the bus.
And then they come in with the key and they like unlock it and they're like, here you go, and you jam it, and you're just like, suddenly you're listening to Rammstein in Hemel Hempstead Virgin Megastore, and you're just like, fucking hell, I do hast.
We need
do you know what I mean?
We need to get a listening station of merch.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Yeah, like,
so sick.
Oh, brilliant.
As long as it can have a Rammstein.
So for track 5, gents, I ask you to pick the song that soundtracked your clubbing years.
Yeah.
Were you clubbers? And when I say clubbers, that can be rock clubs, that can be
indie
clubs.
I'd say we're probably more clubbers now than we've ever been.
But. Yeah, yeah. But thing is, like, I did grow up going to rock clubs, and if I had... I could have given you like tons of songs, Time Bomb by Rancid, fucking, you know, killing them,
so
name
many
off
people
by
have Rage Against the Machine. Time Bomb.
It's really? A fucking so tune, like dance floor banger. But we actually love dance music, and we love techno, and we love house, and we love like all that stuff. So when I heard that question, it was like the only thing for me was a Justice song, and it was either DANT or We Are Your Friends, and it was, and I can't remember what I put down, but it was
Justice versus Simeon.
Yeah. And it's like, and the thing is, like, for me, we still listen to them.
That still goes on before we play quite a lot.
Our
playlist.
Because it's a cracking tune.
Oh man, it's,
do you know how it come about?
No.
So I had, you guys know Eddie Temple Morris?
Yeah.
So I had Eddie on, and he, when he was on XFM, he used to do his show, The Remix, where he would get aspiring like young producers to send in mashups, and someone sent that mashup in,
outrageous,
played it, and then obviously the rest is history. Both artists have gone on to become super successful and make incredible
music.
That's
incredible.
It's mental, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure that Eddie did a remix of In the Belly of a Shark.
Really?
Yeah, and it's mental. Let's do it.
Oh, he's a top lad, he's Eddie. Yeah. What did you guys want from clubbing?
A girlfriend.
We definitely both thought the same thing, and I thought, think of something else. That's why most people go clubbing when they're young.
Yeah.
To meet people.
To dance and like to kiss and to fucking feel all the things that you want to feel when you're young, but you can't really do anywhere else.
With rock clubs, there's that also that sort of sense of like, there is a belonging because there's a lot of other people here that want the same thing. So I think I definitely enjoyed the confidence of being out, not a gig, but like out drinking and out like partying, but with loads of other people, rather than being like the five sort of emos, as it were, for me at the time in a regular club. I definitely was drawn to rock clubs for that.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Like, I've run a club in Essex called the Pink Toothbrush I've worked there for 27 years, and it's the longest running sort of alternative club in the UK. And it's so mad to sort of see constant generations of awkward
that still
people
need that,
coming in that feel that connection and can express themselves and dance to the music. That
I saw Annie Mack was doing a big thing about how clubs that have like a niche and like a certain community they serve are thriving. General kind of like everyman clubs are closing down because they're being replaced by like Tinder. But clubs where you're going there not just to meet someone but to meet people that are like you are actually thriving and getting bigger and bigger and doing bigger events. So
exactly,
I think that will always be a need for people.
Completely. I think you know, you look at historically why a lot of people go clubbing is to meet people of the opposite sex or the same sex
and to
drink booze and now you can go to a supermarket and buy a case of lager for like £9. You can create your own. You know, and obviously, you used to go to clubs to hear new music.
Yeah.
You indulge with Spotify. You can make your own playlist, have your friends around for
the community part's the bit that's left, I think.
And you can literally chat to people on Tinder. And I think you're right, completely right, when you talk about those niche venues where you want where you've got that longing to find like-minded people.
Yeah.
And they're few and far between. I mean, I know I'm a lot older than yourselves, but even when you were younger and going to alternative clubs, I'm sure there was a lot more then than there is now.
Mm.
You know, you'd come to London and there was Indian rock clubs everywhere.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They don't really exist as much anymore, and it's a shame.
Mm.
You know, you wonder where these kids go to kind of find their way.
Just online, but that's just kind of like going to every club in the world all at once. Yeah. It's pretty, can be dangerous, I think.
Okay, track 6. A favourite song from an artist from your hometown.
Oh, who did you go for?
I didn't say from my hometown.
I said home country.
Yeah, Walter said home country.
Do you go Elton John?
If it I went,
was,
if I went
county,
El-
but like, if I went right, Elton John, I'm, first to make
if I went Elton John, I nailed it anyway because he's Watford boy.
Is he from Watford?
Yeah. Job done.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah, yeah.
Is
yeah.
it Elton John
yeah.
this one?
Yeah.
If
yeah,
I had known that though, if it was a home county's cool, but you know Dave Vanian is from Hemel Hempstead, from the
really?
Band. Yeah,
really.
How fucking cool is that?
Awesome.
Yeah, sick. But anyway. Yeah, it's Elton John, and it's Benny and the Jets. Like, this song is, again, is we basically have picked, like, we always try and find a way to get back to our pre-show playlist. It's the most important playlist of music for us because it's the one that gets us psyched. Yeah. This track, like, we will literally be carrying it on a speaker
yeah.
on our walk to stage.
It's like time to
it
go
just
to stage.
Gets
and
me, like, when I just hear that, bam, bam, I'm, like, fucking headbanging already. Like, it's just so good. It just absolutely sets the vibe to play.
Was it in? We just did some shows of Bring Horizon in Australia, and it was like arena shows. And one of them, there wasn't really a side stage, and so we walked out with the thing, and there's just like thousands of people, and we're just like the other side of the barrier with the UE Boom, just bopping to this tune. But they can all see us; they can probably hear it a little bit amongst the playback. Right? It's like what we hear literally just before we go on.
Brilliant. And I think at that point, Elton John was pretty untouchable, wasn't he? I think around that era of his work, it was.
He's a complete living legend. And that's the ironic thing about people that are alive and legends is people don't really realise that until they stop making music or they're gone. Yeah. And he's 100% in that list of people.
Yeah, yeah, he's an absolute fucking icon.
Right, I sometimes just realise that Elton John's touring and I'm like, I know he's on his last tour now, but you're like, I should be going to these shows.
Yeah.
I've never had the opportunity to see Pink Floyd and all these people. Yeah. He's in that list and yeah. You take it for
my mum went to see him. She went all the way to Madison Square Garden to see him, and she said it was the best gig of her life. And I was like, "Cheers, mum." But then I was like, "I can't really argue with that." Can no. I? It's fucking Elton John. Like, if we are 100%. This is the best gig.
We're 100% going on this tour.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
I know it lasts 3 years, but we got to make sure.
We have to, yeah.
So going back to Vanian, but a big thing for you.
For me, yeah. Like, I love punk rock music. Always have, but. It was just interesting because, when you have a song like New Rose, which is so fucking important.
That's mine for best intro.
Yeah, okay, there you go. It's like, when I found out, like, basically what happened was, my mum was just driving along and I was like, talking about punk rock and, you know, and she was like, oh, I remember. Back in the day, like, I went to see The Damned, and Susie and the Banshees playing the Pavilion in Hemel. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I was like, excuse me? Like, how the fuck did that? And she's like, oh, yeah, he's from Hemel. He's like, lift up the road. I was like, why have you not fucking... I was like, where was this? Like, where is this incredible piece of information? No, I was older. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't know that. And she's like, oh, yeah, it was a great gig. I was like, oh, cool, cheers, mum. So I almost got this glimpse into, like, my mum's life. Mm. Like, they back then would just go to any gig that was on.
Local
that
gigs,
was the one that she remembered the most, was, like, fucking Susie and the Banshees and the Damned playing in Hemel Hempstead. Like,
that ain't a bad lineup, is it?
No.
Fucking sick. So
and it
sick.
Feels like, the Damned are now getting their recognition.
Totally.
Because it felt for so long through the sort of late 80s and early 90s that I think they'd done some stuff sort of mid to late 80s that was quite a departure, I think, from like the early stuff. Even though stuff like Wembley Phoenix and that, to me, I think like, sort of Madness and stuff like that when I hear it, really good pop songs. And I think they have pop sensibilities throughout anyway. But it feels now that the Damned are getting that kind of nod that they were a fucking vital part of that scene.
Exactly, and I think it's integral that we acknowledge that, like, across the board for all bands, that paved the way for everybody, really, because without them, like, making those bold statements and those big steps early on, like, so many of us wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing. Because, and it's not about the direct link between me and the Damned. Like, it's about every single band that the Damned inspired along the way, across the board, and how many of them fed into my life. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's when you go... You were saying the other day, like, you'd read that article, I can't remember who it was, but they were saying, they were basically saying, like, if you've listened to every song that you love,
I know, it was just
artist,
it was just Tom Misch.
Tom Misch.
He just tweeted and was just like, if you've ran out of new music, go and listen to who inspired your favourite bands. Because obviously we're at a point now where it's trickled down. It's not just always the Beatles. It's gone a long way, and there's so many amazing artists. But it's a great thought, isn't it? Like, just go and listen to whoever it is inspired your favourite band, and chances are you'll love them.
Yeah, it's nothing better than joining the dots. I love it. Just coming back to Elton John quickly, you guys seen the trailer for the film?
Yeah. It looks amazing.
Man, is it Taron Egerton? Is that his name?
And he sings it as well.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, this is the best bit about it. Is obviously, you'd normally never try and cast someone that can look like it, act it and sing it, but he sings the whole thing.
Which just makes it really
special.
Final track. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
What did you go
2019
for?
By Kid Capici.
Ah, yes.
Was it 2019 or Glitterati?
Kid Capici, Glitterati.
Ah, it's their new one, new single.
This band are like... So we didn't know who they were. We had no fucking idea. We ended up doing like a radio session with Jack Saunders, and he does this thing where you do like a little face-off, and we pick a playlist, and he has a playlist, and then people vote in and say which was the better track.
Mm.
And I can't even remember what we picked to go up against it, but he just dropped this song on us, which was 2019 by the band Kid Capici. And we're both freaking out, like, this is the best fucking song.
We totally lost our cool and just forgot about the fact we were on radio.
Yeah, so. And we're just there, like, banging our head, like, who the fuck are these lot? Yeah. Why have we not heard about this band yet? And so immediately, look, we left the radio and we just, like, got it up on the speakers and we just jammed it, like, for a week solid. Didn't we? Then it found its way into the playlist. Then we ended up playing with them a couple nights ago. We've got my birthday on Saturday and then Dean's birthday on the 4th of May, and we've got like a joint party on Friday night, and they're kind of come play.
Every now and then we fall into the same band that we love and that are also a sort of band that we can invite out on tour and stuff. And as soon as we do, we do everything we can to... I specifically remember when there was a band that gave me an opportunity like that, and
Who was it?
Architects for me.
I know.
Yeah.
But it's important, isn't it?
But they went above and beyond, and it wasn't benefiting them helping my band out at the time.
Yeah.
And, like, not to be brutal to Kid Capici, but it's them that we can help more than our tours. And it's like, it just feels awesome to be able to do that for a band that just write amazing songs.
And it still plays down now to us, you know, like Biffy Clyro went out of their way for us to drag us onto a European tour that we
bring
couldn't
the horizon,
afford. Bring me the horizon,
flew us to Australia,
just flew us to Australia to play three shows.
Yeah, I think it's important to carry that on, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So when you've got that opportunity and you have a platform to share, like, the easiest thing to do is to share it with a band that you love.
Mm.
So that's why I picked this one.
Amazing. What's coming up?
So much, dude. Album obviously is coming out like soon. When's this going out?
This will be going out, I reckon, in about 3 weeks' time. So
album's out.
Everyone loved it. It was actually amazing. Everyone, the reaction was awesome.
New classic. Number one, fucking blowing everyone's minds. So that's like the main thing that we've been focused on for the past half a year, really, is just getting to this point, because we've wanted to make a third album. You know, every band that we've been in has never quite made it to that, at least with us still in them. And so, like, for us, it was really integral that we made that, because I think, you know, when you go back and you look at artists like Elton John, you know, he didn't have a hit until his third album, you know. A lot of the time, like, they were never really given, artists nowadays, they're not given the time to develop, do you know what I mean? Like, they're shut down before... Yeah. Or they're sold on, or they're dropped before they've even had a chance to, like, understand who
it's
they
like
are.
It's like, if Dark Side of the Moon's not your debut album, then you're not a great band. And it's like, it wasn't. Like,
unfortunately, that's the world we live in at the moment, isn't it? It's so, as I mentioned at the beginning, disposable, that if you don't sell X amount of records by your first release, you know,
think of all the amazing third albums that are missing from this planet. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's why it's important for us to make it here. And then I think what we said as well is once you get to this point, you can kind of then sort of settle in and do as many as you want. Like we've got through the hardest part, which was to get to the third one.
Yeah.
And now hopefully we'll make another 30.
Fingers crossed. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Festivals?
All of them.
Yeah. Reading and Leeds, that's the big one, isn't it? That's we're playing highest we've ever played on a main stage.
Yeah, that's quite a spot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Man, it's unbelievable. I was just looking at the lineup from year 2000 was the first year I went to Reading. I was like 16 years old. And we just looked at the lineup to see who was in that slot. And like, fucking Sunday night is Slipknot.
Fucking hell.
After Eminem and Rage Against the Machine.
Blink-182.
Do you know what I mean? And then on the Friday, it was fucking Foo Fighters. And now here we are, like, 19 years later, and it's us. And then it's Foo's. A Day to Remember, and then the fucking Foo Fighters. And it's just like, if you were to tell me back then when I was, like, hanging out my fucking ass in that tent, like, shivering in the rain, in a boiler suit wearing a Slipknot mask, wearing a clown mask, by the way, one day you're going to be in that slot, like, I would have been like, get the fuck out of here. Like, that's not true.
It was only 5 years ago, someone said, you're going to play Reading, full stop. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, it's really crazy, like, how quickly that festival's sort of put us higher and higher up the bill.
That's John. It's John Mack and the whole crew of Reading. Yeah. Like, they really, from the very beginning, Dan Carter, I sent him two songs. And I was like, hey, like, I'd never ask for this, but like, listen to these, and if you like it, give us a shot at Reading, you know, because it would be the first year that I've missed it for a while. And he listened. He's like, oh, it's done. Yeah, you're on. Right. So
we played Reading like 4 months after we started the band. Basically,
we had an EP, and we had one tour under our belt. Yeah. And we didn't have a manager, we didn't have a booking agent, nothing. No. We just went and played
every year since. Like, we've been very fortunate.
They've just constantly backed us and supported us, and it's been amazing. So yeah,
fantastic. All the best, lads.
Thank you very much
for doing this.
Thank you really for having us. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
I told you that was good. Knew you was going to enjoy it. What absolute lovely fellas. It was a real pleasure to be able to sit with them. Could have spoken for ages, really, but obviously the new record's out, and when they come to do that, it was pre-release, so they were off doing loads of different media bits and pieces. So I felt really privileged that they gave up some time to come and do this podcast. So thanks again to those and Chris at the PR company and Brian Message as well for helping facilitate this podcast. Big thanks to the Queen of Hoxton for letting me use the venue to record in, and thank you mostly to you lot for listening. Thank you ever so much. It really is a joy doing these podcasts. It was something that I set out to do just through being Pip's mate and guesting on a couple of his drunk casts. It's grown and grown and grown, and I'm just privileged now. It seems almost weekly now to be able to sit down with creative people whose work I'm, you know, influenced by, inspired by, and this episode you've just listened to was very much the case there. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time. See you later. Oh yeah, sorry, I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast. And it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a lot of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.